Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is episode 62. We're doing a special on Sweden, and we're in November 2015. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. The Phileas Club is a show where we get together every month or so and we explore and discuss the different things that have been happening in that month with the eye of our local culture and local news reporting. So usually we have people from different parts of the world, and we compare and contrast and discuss how we see the events that unfold in the world. This episode, though, is another special episode. I started that with Turkey last month. We did a special on Saudi Arabia, and it was really fun. I hope you enjoyed it. And we are going to be doing another one just a month after. I'm not sure we're going to be doing one every month, but this time we had an opportunity to get Brekkie on the show. I'm almost married to Turkey now. I spend so much time with him on podcasts. How's it going, Brekkie?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm very well. So you are from Sweden. People who are familiar with the show will have heard you a couple of times at least already. So you're living in Sweden now, but you are actually from Iceland originally, which means right. You're going to be speaking for the entirety of Scandinavia, because we have 2 out of 4.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
Excellent. So we're going to be doing a Sweden special with some bleeding over to Scandinavia. And I think the show is going to be more or less the same thing as it was for Saudi Arabia, trying to find out how people actually live in Sweden. And I think the most one of the most interesting things that I'm sure we're going to get into at some point is that image that Sweden has of a wonderful socialist country where, you know, there is socialism, kind of, but also the highest standards of living, the an incredible amount of equality in the country and society. And that's the image, at least. But before we get into that, tell me, Brekkie, how long have you been living in Sweden? Where has your life taken you?
Well, I was born in Iceland back in 1980, and the entire family moved to Sweden in 1984. So I've been in Sweden for most of my life. My connection to Iceland is very weak. I hardly ever go there. I mean, the last time I was in Iceland must have been, 7 years ago, I think.
So do you consider yourself Swedish?
Yes, I do. I've got Swedish citizenship and everything. So, I'm only really Icelandic in blood. I'm Swedish by,
in heart.
Yes, in heart. And well, I don't know. I've traveled to 35, 36 countries at the moment. I've spent a lot of time abroad. And I consider myself a citizen of the world in many ways. So it's very easy for me to look at Sweden from an outside perspective as well, because I've spent so much time in, you know, the Middle East, in Africa, in North America, and in Asia, and so on.
So wait a second. Before we dive into Sweden, and we will, 30-some countries, is that something that you decided one day, I'm going to travel, or, you know, and you spent a lot of time everywhere, or did you just, you know, go on 1 week or 3 days vacations to lots of places, and that's how you reached the astounding number of 30?
None of the above. It's as part of my work, actually. I've been traveling a lot through the Middle East and Asia mainly, and Africa, for technical training in a product that my company does. So I spend a lot of time with the customer, teaching them the product and spending time, you know, around their office, around the city centers, depending on, you know, what kind of country you're in. So I've spent a lot of time in countries most people never, ever go to, like Guinea-Bissau or Chad and even Cameroon. I spent a very interesting night in Cameroon before they kicked me out of the country.
Okay. Is that the kind of night we shouldn't ask about in a public forum and we should wait until we meet and have a beer to discuss?
We can save that for another show, I suppose.
All right. Okay. So the first question I asked Turkey, and I think it's appropriate for any country, so I'm going to ask you the same question, was what stereotype about Sweden, or, you know, if you want to generalize Sweden to Scandinavia, feel free to do that. But what stereotype about Sweden is the most annoying to Swedes and to you in particular?
Well, the common one is everybody mixes up Sweden and Switzerland. But that's
oh,
not
really?
So much. Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, we say, you know, if I'm abroad and I say I'm from Sweden and they're like, oh, with the cuckoo clocks and the chocolate. No.
And that gets to you?
Yes, it does. And it's funny, I was doing a podcast just about a month ago with somebody from Switzerland, and she said the very same thing. They always get them mixed up with Sweden for some
that
reason.
That is so weird.
Yeah, okay. You know, they both start in SW, but then so does Swaziland.
I guess so. So it's not like the IKEA things, like, oh, they go and invent some ridiculous name of some IKEA piece of furniture and go like, oh, don't you like the Buglufts?
And there is some of that, a little bit depending on which nationality the person you're talking to is from. A lot of Americans, they go immediately to the Swedish chef from the Muppets and go, oh, Sweden, yeah, bork, bork, bork. So there's a lot of that. And also in many parts of Europe, and this is especially obvious for my female friends when they're in Europe and they say, oh, we're from Sweden. Oh, you're from Sweden. Interesting. Well, so how is Sweden? Yeah. So tell me more. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sensing a hint of flirtation in there. Is
yes.
That what you're trying to say?
Very much so, because Swedes have this reputation of being very loose sexually. And while this is actually true in some respect,
okay.
I mean, the average Swedish person has more sexual partners than most European countries' average sexual partners. But it's not by, you know, leaps and bounds. It's not 40 compared to 8.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, a few more.
So is that because people get drunk and then do weird things? Because my understanding is that that's the way it happens in Finland, because people mm-hmm. get depressed because of the nighttime. And but so for those who don't know, in that latitude, the winters become extremely have really long nights and very short daytime. It's basically 6 hours of day and the sun doesn't go very much over the horizon. So people have a tendency to get depressed, right?
Yeah. I mean, up in the very far north of Sweden, an area called Riksgränsen, which is basically the border between Sweden and the north of Norway, there are 32 days of pure darkness where the sun never even
30
rises.
30 Days of Night is a movie that I saw with vampires.
Oh, really?
It was interesting.
Then again, that area also gets 56 days of pure daylight.
Right,
of course. Where the sun never sets.
That is also kind of, it's scary, but it's not as, it doesn't sound as depressing as 30 Days of Night. So getting back to the sexual proclivity, mm-hmm. is that something that is, you're saying it's kind of true. Why would it be true?
I think it has a lot of different reasons. And one of the reasons I think is, Sweden is one of the most secular countries in the world. We don't have a lot of religious laws and you know, prohibitions telling us what kinds of morals to have. Instead, we kind of just make it up as we go. And a lot of people, you know, feel that there's really no need to have any sexual morals. You know, if you want to go have dinner with someone, sure, go have dinner with someone. If you feel you have to go to the bathroom, sure, go to the bathroom. If you feel you want to have sex, sure, have sex. It's you know, in that kind of area. It's, you know, it's something people do.
When you're saying go to the bathroom, are you also including this as a group activity or?
okay, no, never mind. It's more, you know, the relationship people have to bodily functions and bodily desires.
Ah, I see. So it's nothing is dirty. Nothing is forbidden or, you know, because it is.
Right.
Right, right.
I mean, to some people, absolutely. And this might be a bit of a generational thing as well. But in general, my impression, or this might just be the people that I meet and hang out with, of course, which would be nice. In general, it's just the feeling that I get that people are generally a bit more open about their sexualities. I mean, there's even, you know, online communities here in Sweden that are all about, you know, say just the BDSM crowd, and they have tens of thousands of members, people just, you know, hooking up because they have a shared interest in their own sexual fetish.
I guess it happens in every country, but it seems like it's more, it's less guilt-ridden in Sweden. Right. Okay, so what is, maybe that's the one, but what is the stereotype about Sweden that is the most true?
I would have to say the one that's most true is that we are a very reserved people. We don't wear our feelings on the outside, and we don't talk to people if we don't have to, and so on. I mean, we're the kind of people who would avoid our high school friend if we accidentally see them in the store. And even if it's been 5 to 10 years since we saw them, if we notice them, we just, you know, change aisles because it's,
why?
You know, we don't want to talk to people. That's weird. You know, unless you're asking for directions, maybe then you can talk to a stranger. But
So you mean it feels uncomfortable to talk to someone?
Yes.
You know, that's
something. A
lot of
people are very reserved here. And this is not rudeness or anything like that. I mean, once you become friends with someone, Swedes are as warm and as friendly and as kind and generous as, you know, anybody else out there. But it's this entire idea about, the private space. We don't invade people's private spaces without being very, very clear that it's okay. And we feel very uncomfortable when other people do that to us.
My wife has been telling me about the social awkwardness of Finns for a long time, and it seems that there is some of that in Sweden as well.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Mm. So actually that leads us into the next sort of discussion I want to have. For some reason, I have this idea that it's interesting to get to understand how a young teenager's school day goes. And that's one of the questions I asked Turkey again. So I'm going to do that with you too. Basically, given that, you know, I think it's even more interesting with the social awkwardness. For someone who goes to school, I guess you just get up in the winter. You get up, it's dark, you go to school, it's dark, you meet people, it's dark. Like, does that, not just the darkness, but how does a day of a school person go? Is there any difference with the way it goes in other countries, or is there anything interesting there?
I don't think it's all that different. We follow more or less the same structure as most European countries do when it comes to schooling, where we have, you know, their first 9 years of primary school and then 3 years of secondary school. The 9 years are obligatory. The three follow-up years are they're voluntary. And then we have universities and so on after. But as for the day itself, I mean, no, most people just wake up, they commute to work, they do their classes. There's a bit more focus nowadays on more independent learning. So you kind of build up the program that you want to study yourself to a larger extent.
How does
extent.
That work?
Not very well. If you look at the PISA scores for Sweden, they've actually been dropping quite significantly. And there are many different explanations as to why this is.
Sorry, I just want to hearken back to the social awkwardness thing, because my impression of Sweden is that there is a lot of homogenization in the population and maybe even with the kids, kind of. There are, the harmony in Swedish society seems to come from a big amount of similarity in classes and people and populations. And so coupled with the social awkwardness, it seems to me that there is a lot of everyone kind of belongs to the same group, and that is manifested in even the looks and the things you like. And so is that me being completely out of the out of touch with the reality of Sweden?
It's true to a certain extent, absolutely. I mean, we do obviously have, you know, we have subcultures, we have immigrants, we have all kinds of things that make it so that we're not a completely homogenized society. Not everyone is 6 foot tall named Sven and has blonde hair.
You're talking about the hair, but there is a very specific type of haircut that I associate with Swedish guys.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And that is weird, actually. It's like, yeah. and they all have the same, like, to the side and, like, boys band-ish thing, which sometimes doesn't look very good, by the way, but...
Doesn't fit everyone, no.
So doesn't that come from some kind of weird group thing, homogenization thing?
I don't know. I suppose it very well might be, but then again, I mean, most people just... You know, they cut their hair according to the looks that they see around them, and when
and they all have the same one, so they see everything. I'm again generalizing here, but
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, we can see the same thing in lots of areas of the world where, you know, there's a very obvious and without stereotyping here, there's a very obvious Russian look.
Young
Russian men. You get an image in your head about what a young Russian man looks like and what he wears and the kind of, you know, sports Adidas clothes he's wearing at the moment or something. there's a very specific look that you associate to a lot of areas and places. And, you know, in Sweden, that look might have been, you know, tall, blonde, and beautiful for a long time until people started seeing what Swedes actually look like. But yeah, the Swedish haircut, I know what you mean, and it's definitely
it's
a thing.
Just, yeah, I guess it's possibly that it's just a you know, fashion style in Sweden in the last few years. But awkwardness coupled with sexual proclivity to an extent, but and the relative lack of religious morals. Again, teenagers... does that make the day of a teenager? What's the pressure like for a kid growing up in Sweden? Do you have like the same? Because I know that in the US, for example, you have the cliques, and it does play a relatively heavy role in high schools from, you know, not just the movies or the TV shows that I've seen, but really talking to people, it seems that is based in reality. Obviously, it's exaggerated in the culture in the media, but and in France we don't have that, or at least I didn't when I was growing up. It wasn't, people were not in different groups and you weren't judged by the group you were in. How does it go in Sweden?
It's pretty much the same here as you've experienced in France. We don't have these cliques in the same way. It's not the jocks versus the nerds versus the cheerleaders versus the metalheads versus the goths and so on. But all these people do exist in some ways, but we don't have the same kind of grouping together. And I think part of that is we don't have the same mentality that, you know, the jocks, let's push them into the sports team and create this huge culture around them. And then let's create this artificial construct of the cheerleaders and so on. It's because sometimes I feel that in American culture, that kind of thing is encouraged, if not explicitly, then at least implicitly. Here in Sweden, instead, you know, everybody comes to the same classroom. They all do more or less the same work because we all want to do exactly the same thing and become exactly the same person when we grow up. That's me being bitter with the mentality.
No, but see, you're kind of referring to something I was alluding to earlier and that you kind of disputed. Where does that, we all want to, you know, we do the same work and we all want to become the same person, remark come from?
Well, for a long time, we've, Sweden has had a very left-wing government for most of its modern existence. It started to change in the 70s and then shifted back to a left-wing government. And then we've had right-wing governments, or, you know, as far right as it gets in Sweden, which is still, you know, far left of the Democrats in the United States. So we've, you know, we've shifted back and forth, but for most of Swedish history, it's been left-wing governments, the social Democrats, so to speak. And a big part of what they've done, especially in education, is they've picked specific courses, specific knowledge, specific structures that they believe everyone should know and should understand to be a citizen, I suppose. You don't do a citizenship test or anything like that, but they've decided specific terms and goals, and, you know, everybody needs to have read these books, everybody needs to have understood these courses, and so on. This is beginning to change. Like I mentioned, there's more individual choices now in school, although it's far from what you can see in some other countries.
But that explains kind of the, you know, education uniformity, but it doesn't explain why you all want to have the same job and be the same person, as you explained earlier.
I think part of that is simply because a lot of people just haven't broken free of that pattern, I think. There is more and more of that coming around now, or at least that's what I'm experiencing from the younger generations. Me and people younger than me, is that there's a lot of people who are, you know, finally trying to go their own way and doing their own thing and being more inspired by, say, the American culture or the British culture, or, you know, something that's very different and doing something very unique, trying to make money on the internet, creating a podcasting empire and stuff like that. You know, this just wasn't done. People, they went to school, they went to high school, then they got a job at Ericsson. And then 50 years later, they retired from Ericsson with their gold watch and just lived off state pensions.
So that was the usual way things worked in Sweden. And when would you say that has started to change?
Very gradually since the 80s, I would say. Okay. The 80s was basically when the entire idea, because we have this idea in Sweden called folkhemmet, which is basically the people's home. It's this concept. It's a metaphor for a politically organized society. Let me just read the definition from Wikipedia here. It's a political concept that played an important role in the history of the Swedish Social Democratic Party and the Swedish welfare state. It's sometimes used to refer to the long period between 1932 and 1976, when the Social Democrats were in power and the concept was put into practice. It's basically this midway between capitalism and socialism, where the entire society is like a small family where everyone contributes. And in the very end of the 70s, they say 1976 here, which, you know, makes sense, but it's probably closer to the early 80s when it actually started changing. Where, you know, we started getting influence from other kinds of political minds than the fairly socialist, this Marxist-Leninist doctrine of, you know, because they basically wanted to create a society without major income differences and so on. And that, sure, it went okay, but it didn't go very well because...
So... You know, Let me stop you there.
Sure.
The socialism that you have in Sweden, I think by the world standard would be considered, you know, social democratism.
Yes.
Social democracy, definitely. And it's not like you were referencing Marx and Lenin. It's not communism. It's very different, and I want to stress that out for those who might think, especially in the US, oh, socialism, oh my God, no one can own anything and the state has everything and redistributes.
Right.
That is not the case, but the socialism is a little bit more nuanced. You can, of course, have entrepreneurship. It's sometimes encouraged, and it's just that the state is going to provide for all of the citizens some basic services. And it seems that it's working very well in Sweden. You're saying that it didn't work out so well, but Sweden is one of the most, you know, the richest countries in the world. And it seems that everyone has, the standard of living is very high, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So how does it not work? I'm not sure I understand. Everyone's happy.
Right. Just to redefine terms, social democracy, it's a political ideology that supports both economic and social intervention by government in order to promote social justice within the framework of capitalist economy. So the government is basically providing state provisions like welfare, pensions, collective bargaining arrangements. They regulate the economy. They redistribute income and wealth. They have a representative democracy and so on.
But you know, that's what we have in France, and
oh, yeah,
for the most part.
Sure.
But
the French system is very similar.
Exactly. But it doesn't seem like we have the standard of living that you guys have. I mean, you have things like, let's talk specifics now. You have, for example, maternity and paternity leaves that are outrageous to anyone who is not in the Nordic region. You have what? It's 18 months to share between the father and the mother.
Right.
It's, you have, you know, free education, free healthcare, free unemployment benefits, and everything, all of this works. doesn't it?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, absolutely.
So how is it, how is this not, as I was joking on Twitter and Facebook earlier, how is this not a socialist paradise?
I think one of the reasons people don't consider this a socialist paradise is when a lot of people look at socialism, they expect something so much more. They're looking at Marxist or Leninist philosophy. They're not looking at what we see here.
But let's put that aside. Let's say, how is this not a social democrat success story? Or even let's take political ideology out of the equation. And let's just look at the standard of living. Mm-hmm. Isn't it like one of the most successful countries in that sense in the world?
In many ways, yes. Mm. I think the problem that people have doesn't necessarily come from a how much money do I have or how comfortable is life and so on. I think the biggest problem, at least from Swedes here, is a lot of people just feel that they don't have any control over their own lives because Big Daddy government takes care of everything. So if I wanted to spend more money on making my own life more successful, I can't because more than half of my money is already taken from me when my paycheck comes. So a lot of people say, you know, what if I don't want to stand in queue for my jaw surgery or whatever? I don't want to stand in queue for this socialist welfare state hospital and stand in queue for, you know, 3 months or so. I want to go to this private clinic where I can pay more of my own money, but I don't have a queue. A lot of people are waking up to this kind of thinking.
Maybe they want
to go to a private school that, you know, the government is already taking a lot of money for you to pay for your schooling. So why would you pay more money to send your kid to a private school when you're already paying for the public school?
So you're saying that you can do that, but it's just you don't have any money left to do it. And when I say you don't have enough money left, it depends on who you are, obviously, but yeah, they're already taking a lot of money, but you could, in theory. It's not like private schools are forbidden.
Yeah, I mean, Sweden is ranked fifth in the Global Tax Burden Report. There are only four countries in the world where the citizens are taxed higher than Sweden.
Okay, and that is not a super... I don't know. Again, stereotypes. I have this image that Swedes are very happy with this thing, and they have this, how did you call it,
Folkhemmet.
Folkhemmet, sorry. Folkhemmet idea, where at least that's what I'm hearing from my wife again, the sort of Protestant morals, and you were saying there aren't so many religious constraints in society, but the Protestant aspects of it makes everyone a good worker, and everyone's happy about the fact that, yes, we all support each other and it works and everyone's happy. You're saying that's not the case. Not everyone is happy about that state of affairs.
Not so much, no. It's on the surface, that is absolutely how things appear to be. But there are a lot of pressure points in the country where things are not as good as they could have been. For example, the welfare state is experiencing a lot of pressure due to the increased immigration over the past couple of years. So a lot of people are actually very afraid that maybe there's just not going to be enough money for their pensions. Maybe there's not going to be enough, you know, people to take care of healthcare or schooling and so on. So the entire welfare idea is a good one, but a lot of people are afraid that maybe it's not the best one.
Interesting. So I want to get to the questions that people on Facebook and elsewhere asked. But before that, I do want to tackle the question of gender equality, because, again, it seems that Sweden is this country where everyone is very attached to the idea of gender equality, and women have the most rights of, you know, any country in the world. Is that the case? Is that an exaggeration? Is it what?
Many people consider Sweden the best place to be a woman, in my opinion. I mean, here we are, two white guys talking about this, so it's maybe not the most accurate thing. But yes, the World Economic Forum's Gender Gap Index puts Sweden very, very high. We used to be first, now we're fourth. There's a couple of other countries that have, you know, jumped up ahead of us in some ways. which is fine because, you know, we were so far ahead of the pack for a long time that I'm actually glad people are now catching up with the way we're doing things. It's not like we've fallen back.
So can you give us a couple of examples of what that implies?
Well, it's in many ways the obvious things. You know, men and women are expected to have the more or less the same salary for the same position. You know, sometimes women are ahead, sometimes men are ahead. It's, you know, there's never a one-to-one proportion, but, you know, most of the time things are fairly even. Men and women take out the same kind, roughly the same amount of days when they're on parental leave. It's not like men take 2 months and women take their 11 remaining months or their 14 remaining months. You know, so things like that are very, very good. We have a lot of women in public office and, you know, they represent the government. It's not like 10 white guys and then one token woman. But, you know, obviously there's still a long way to catch up. And we, it's difficult to say because we have a very strong feminist movement in Sweden. And for some people, it's become a little bit too aggressive. I'm not one of those. I consider them to be very wide and varied. But there is this general impression that as soon as people start talking about feminism in Sweden, there is nowadays a lot of eye rolling, which kind of annoys me because there are still things that need to be done. There are still things that need to be fixed, but there's way too often that people, you know, like there was this huge debate on in the media just last winter where they were talking about, you know, when the snow comes and we need to start removing the snow from the streets and the sidewalks and so on. There was a feminist approach to this discussion. Do we take it off of the streets, which are mainly driven, which are mainly patrolled by cars, which are driven by men, or do we take it from the sideways, which are mainly walked on by women? Women use the sideways to take their children to school in the morning. Men use the roads to drive to work in the morning.
So wait, already here, if it is the case that women take the kids to school and men drive to work, in significant you know, proportions that it can be talked about that way. There is, so that's where you're coming from when you're saying there are still things to be done. Is that it?
Absolutely. I mean, and right. There's never going to be a 50-50 in anything. It's always going to shift back and forth. And even though we might be more equal in many ways than other countries, I don't think any country ever will be 100% exactly equal. You're going to have to abandon the entire concept of gender if you want to reach any kind of equality.
Yes.
But, you know, things shift back and forth. You know, every now and again, something happens that, you know, something happens.
So, yeah, sorry, I interrupted you with the story about the snow plowing.
Right. So there was this huge debate then about plowing the streets, you know, whether to plow the sidewalks first so that, you know, so that women can take their kids to school in the morning and so on, or whether to plow the main streets so that men can drive to work and that business can operate and, you know, deliveries and so on can work out fine. And when the debate started approaching this kind of territory, there was a lot of just general eye rolling in society because people were thinking that, yeah, you know, feminism is fine. We want men and women to have the same salary. We want men and women to have the same kind of representation. But once we're talking about these kinds of things, it's just silly. That was very
it
much.
It feels a little bit silly to me, I have to say. And I am a very, you know, convinced feminist, and I don't know if it feels silly to me because it has never entered my sphere of consciousness, or if it's because it's actually silly.
I think it is actually silly.
Okay.
And there have been so many examples of this, like there was a discussion about gendered haircuts. So, you know, you shouldn't cut your kid's hair in a specific way because that genders them to be a male haircut or a female haircut and so on.
You know, actually, we my wife, sorry, I keep referring to her, but she is from the Nordic region. She is horrified at the toys that are sold in the toy stores in France because they are very gendered. You know, you have the princesses for the girls and the construction things and superheroes for the boys. And that I kind of understand. But haircuts, maybe that's going a little bit too far. But
So it's, you know, it's kind of striking back against them. The movement has good force and there's a lot of great representation in feminism here in Sweden. But I just get the impression that a lot of people get the impression that it's being shoehorned in where it doesn't belong. And I can absolutely understand why a lot of people are just fatigued by the entire debate.
So if we go to the funny side of things, have you ever experienced either, you know, non-Scandinavians getting to Sweden and having a kind of experience where, I don't know, I'm going to say something silly, but they hold the door for a woman and that woman is, you know, outraged at the fact that they would hold the door, or the other way around, some male or a female in another country that gets something wrong in that department?
Not so much, actually. It's not something that I've noticed very much of. Even though everybody is, you know, a proponent of equality here in Sweden, I think the traditional gender roles and the traditional gender actions and so on are just too ingrained in people still via, you know, movies and popular culture that a lot of people don't stop and react. I think it's only a very small set of people that actually stops and reacts and goes, oh, wait a second, that was actually pretty gendered, or that was actually pretty, gender stereotyped or whatever. So most people don't stop and think, I think.
So can you buy a girl a drink in a bar, or do you risk being, assaulted? And conversely, will a woman regularly, you know, buy a drink to men, and that is just the way it goes?
I think we're still a far way away from that kind of gender equality.
I was sure you were going to say it happened all the time.
There is still the expectation of men buying drinks for women and men holding the door for open for women and so on. But there's a lot less of taking it for granted. I think if a man and a woman go on a date in Sweden, it's their first date together and they go to a restaurant, and if they haven't said anything, she probably will offer to pay her half. But if he says, you know, it's fine, it's on me, she'll probably be fine with it as well.
And does it happen then that the woman says, it's fine, it's on me?
Well, it's never happened to me, but then again, I am a very wealthy IT professional. So,
I see.
You know, it's always been obvious for me to be the guy who pays. I don't know. I suppose it does happen. I mean, I've...
Right. It's not like it's outrageous that you offered to pay, and you wouldn't be, you know, very surprised if a woman said, it's okay, I'll take it this time.
Right. No, that wouldn't be strange at all.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to Facebook questions. I went to Facebook and said I was going to do this. We were going to do this episode today, and we got a number of pretty interesting questions. The first one I want to go with is one from Natalie, a friend of mine. Hi, Natalie, if you're listening. So she's going to be going to Sweden in February for the first time. And she is asking, first of all, what is the one advice you'd give someone who's never been there? And maybe as it relates to something I was mentioning earlier, what happens when the days become so short? What do people do? Do they go to sleep earlier? Do they go out? You know, anything to say about that? And again, the advice to give someone who wants to get the feel of the country the fastest.
Right. Sure, Natalie, it's a very good question. And I would have to say it depends a lot on where in Sweden you're going. I'm assuming now that you're going to one of the, you know, three or four major cities like Stockholm, Malmo, Copenhagen, Gothenburg, or, you know, one of the major cities. And there's a lot of places to go there. There's restaurants, there's museums. Swedes love museums for some reason, but they're all in the biggest cities, which again is another one of these tax things. People all over Sweden are paying a lot of tax to keep our museums going, and the museums are only located in the three largest cities. Again, you know, one of these weird things. Anyway, museums and so on. Regarding the short light time during the day, you're coming in February. So a little bit depending on when in February, because February is kind of when it starts to change. But you're still going to be expecting it to get dark by 6 in the evening and stay dark until
that's not too bad.
Well, you know, it gets dark fairly quickly, and it's probably very dark by 6. I mean, it's November 10th right now, and it's pitch black outside, and it's only 7 in the evening.
No, so, you know, that's the same here in Paris, actually. I think it's really horrible in December, you know, in end of November until early January, I would guess. February is already similar to what happens in latitudes like the one of Paris. So,
right. If I were to Google Sunset Paris and Sunset Sweden, which tells you exactly when things happen, Sunset Paris gives me 5:17 p.m., which sounds about right. Sunset Sweden gives me 3:31 p.m.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
You so win this one.
Yeah. We had sunset a good 2 hours earlier than you did today.
Okay. So, what do people do when there's no sun?
One of the best things to do to understand Sweden is something that we call the fika. And all the Greeks in the world are giggling right now because that means something completely different in their language. Okay. Fika is basically going for coffee and biscuits, or coffee and bread, or coffee and baked goods in general. Or, you know, it could be, you know, warm chocolate or something on those lines. Swedes love going to cafes and sitting down, talking to each other, spending a lot of time in cafes. And depending on where in Sweden you are, again, if you're in one of the bigger cities, Stockholm, Gothenburg, or Malmo, there's going to be cafes everywhere. And they're all, you know, brightly lit. They're all friendly. There's music in the background. It's almost a very, you know, I would almost call it a French atmosphere. Although the cafe culture is slightly different, the entire idea of having a cafe culture is very similar. So that's definitely something you could try.
So sit down and have coffee or tea.
Yes, especially if you're there with a friend, or if you're visiting someone here, or if you, you know, get to know someone while you're here. Go to a cafe together. Just sit and talk. And regarding the go to sleep earlier, generally, no, I wouldn't think so. But there is a lot of seasonal affective disorder here in Sweden. People do get tired earlier because, you know, it's dark and the body doesn't know when it's supposed to be awake or not.
Do people use those daylight lamps?
There's a little bit of that going around. Not as much as I would have expected, actually. I mean, even in places like San Francisco, where it's, you know, nice and summery all year round, there people use them more than here. I think it's just not something that's actually just made a big splash here in Sweden. There's even, you know, most people don't supplement vitamin D, even though...
Oh, that's what I was going to ask, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, we only get enough sun about, 3 to 4 months a year. In order to fill the actual dietary need of vitamin D. So people should be supplementing. Come on, people. 10,000 international units every day.
Okay. So you do it, is my understanding.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. A question from Guillaume on Facebook again. What is something that foreigners are always surprised by?
Oh, good question. I think a lot of foreigners are surprised by the generally high level of Swedish that people speak. Because most people travel around the world and they go to various countries and they try to ask a question in English and they get confused stares back at them. Unless, of course, they're going to English-speaking countries.
You mean English? You said Swedish.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Okay.
English. Yes. Yeah. But here in Sweden, most people generally have a very good understanding and ability to answer people in English. I would suppose generally that maybe the vocabulary is a little bit lacking, but generally people just understand English and they speak English. And this is something that's true of most generations. It's not like when I spent 5 weeks in Japan and asking anybody something in English was a nightmare unless they were about 25 years or younger.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it is surprising how well everyone speaks English in at least in Finland, and I hear Sweden is basically the same thing.
Hmm. There is the accent, of course, to speak about. I mean, most Swedes are, you know, yes, I am from Sweden, and this is the Swedish accent, and it is always like this, and it's very
difficult. I love the Swedish accent. It's so cute. So cute.
It really is.
You know, actually, I have to... this made me think of the Nobel Prize dinner that my wife makes me watch every year. And that is actually... I've taken a liking to it. It's really interesting. There's the Nobel Prize dinner and the King's something. I can't remember what it is. The King's dinner. So the Nobel ceremony and the King's dinner, and watching the Swedes on TV, is very weird because they look like robots. You know, they're so made up and they look like, I don't know, they have a certain type of smile and a certain type of face expression, and that is the way they look, and it doesn't feel natural. It doesn't seem natural.
This goes back to what I was talking about earlier, in that Swedes are very reserved. Swedes, you know, we don't talk to strangers unless we're being asked for directions, like I said. And this comes through in a lot of social circumstances, especially when there's a lot of people around you who you don't know. Swedes become very, almost aloof. They're very, very closed up and introverted in themselves. And they're not being rude at all. I mean, they just don't know how to deal with people. It's not like, you know, the Swede is not going to be the guy who walks into a party and goes, "Hey, how's everyone doing? Come on, guys, what's up? Hey, have a drink." No, the Swede is the guy who walks into the room and stands in the corner and observes people until he maybe spots someone he knows since earlier. And then he starts talking to that one person. And maybe he hopes for dear life that maybe that person will introduce him to somebody else.
You're so cute, you Swedes.
Yeah.
All right. What's something super interesting that most people don't know about Swedish society, culture, or history? Again, I have a bunch of questions from Guillaume here, so I'm going to go through them.
Something super interesting. Well, Sweden is a very old country.
Oh, people know that.
Yeah, you can date Sweden back to, you know, way, 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 way back. And what many people don't know is we used to own countries like Finland and Norway. We used to have a vast army. I mean, we've, you know, like every major country, we've invaded Poland at some point. It's, you know, one of these things we do.
It's kind of a large club, right?
Yeah. It's a rite of passage. If you want to be a real country, you've got to invade Poland at some point in your history.
Okay, so basically, was it an empire?
In some ways. We were never a colonial power in any kind of way, but we were absolutely a force to be reckoned with. I mean, we fought Russia, we fought Poland, we were part of the entire circle of European countries that had massive armies and did interesting things. And it's not really until the, you know, the 1700s and the 1800s that Swedes started falling back on that and became more, you know, isolated and started focusing more on the innards of the country and, you know, started building up industry instead and trade rather than military conquest. But we used to be a force to be reckoned with.
He also says, it seems that there's a lot of computer geeks and video game nerds in Sweden, maybe more than in other countries. Is that the case or?
Yes, absolutely. And I think the reason for this is that we were very early with internet penetration everywhere. There was a huge push for the internet in the, you know, early to mid 90s. My first internet connection, I had that in 1994, which is a lot earlier.
At home, you mean?
Yeah, at home. Yeah. Mm. Which is a lot earlier than many of my friends in other countries had. And we were up at, you know, very high speeds fairly early as well. So the entire idea of being connected has always been very strong in Sweden, or at least ever since the 90s and the internet revolution. And I think it just became a very natural part of society when that started happening. You know, we all hang out on computers. And since it's dark and there are long distances between us, people would hang out on social networks that were, you know, they were already a big thing in Sweden in the late 90s. Mm. And since everybody was hanging out on computers, it was, you know, impossible not to start to learn other things. Whether that be programming or websites or gaming or whatever. So I think it's, to a large extent, thanks to the internet, that people just started sitting in front of computers a lot more than in many other countries.
And that fast building infrastructure that you kind of mentioned here, is, I'm guessing that's also an effect of the socialist organization of society, where the government was like, holy crap, this is going to be big. We need to all be wired because it's going to, you know, boost our economy.
There's definitely an aspect of that, yeah. And then during the mid to late 90s, there was a lot of private industry as well, because people started noticing that this internet thing, that this was going to be big. So we had these IT companies showing up in Sweden, and that, you know, they all suffered the same fate when the boom happened later on, of course. But we had a huge IT industry, and it's no surprise really that companies like Spotify and Skype and so on, they have an origin here in Sweden, because you know, people were doing their thing and they were, you know, playing around with computers. But yeah, but yes, to a certain extent, there absolutely was a social welfare kind of idea here that people should have the internet, because that makes them able to do things that they wouldn't be able to do otherwise.
All right. There have been a couple of questions about immigration as well. Sean, another good friend, was asking, I've heard great things about how Sweden and other countries in the region take care of their citizens, but I've also heard they are able to do this because of tough immigration laws. And he has no idea if it's true, but he'd be interested in knowing. There are a couple more questions kind of in the same vein from Aaron and Susanna, who are asking basically, for most of its history, it's been exclusively populated by people with nearly identical cultures, and maybe the success Sweden has achieved might not have happened otherwise. And he's talking about this particularly in light of the European and Northern European responses to the migration crisis, etc., etc. So there's a couple of questions in there about homogenized society and the relationship with immigration, not just now, but maybe in the past as well.
Right. The idea that Sweden is successful because we've traditionally been a very homogenous society, I think is a misconception. Most countries have been homogenized through most of their history. Sweden was a success story because we're a big country. We have good shipping lanes towards Eastern Europe and Poland and to Denmark. We're close friends with Norway that has a lot of oil. We have a lot of forests, which fuels our industry and gives us, you know, really cheap wood. I mean, it's no surprise that IKEA was born in Sweden. It's not because he had a good idea. No, it's because lumber was cheap. Lumber was really, really cheap here in Sweden. And immigration really didn't start picking up until very, very recently. And we've had immigration, of course, ever since the 1600s. I mean, we had merchants coming to Sweden. We had people coming in from all kinds of places and all around the world. In the 60s and 70s, we had a lot of immigration from Eastern Europe, mainly tradescraft, you know, people who wanted to follow a specific trade that they couldn't follow in their home country for one reason or another. And then, you know, most recently, we've had a lot of immigration also from, you know, war-torn regions of the world where we feel that we have a humanitarian reason to help them. We have a lot of great things going on for us here in Sweden, and it would just be selfish not to share them with other people.
That's, you know, it seems very different from the approach Finland has been having with immigration, from what I understand, in the past few years and, you know, in its history. How do you, that's another question we got on Facebook. How would you describe your relationship with the Finns?
It's complicated. Most people here in Sweden, at least people who live in the southern half of Sweden and who aren't exposed to Finns regularly, they basically have this preconceived notions that Finns are quiet, reserved, even by Swedish standards. A little bit depressed, drink a lot.
I can confirm like some of those stereotypes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's this Swedish joke that unfortunately not a lot of people have heard, but everybody who's heard it thinks it's the best.
Okay.
It's, you know, Norwegian people cannot be sad, because this is how a Norwegian person sounds when he's sad. Jeg så deprimert. That's me in Norwegian saying I'm so depressed. And similarly, okay, a Finn cannot be happy, because this is a Finn saying, I'm happy. Jag så glad.
You know what? That actually does sound like a Swedish-speaking Finn.
Yeah, it does. Jag så glad. Det är den bästa dagen.
This is the best day. Excellent. Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of that going on. And I think to a certain extent, We are shaped by the language we choose, and the language we speak. And,
well, Swedish in Finland, they most of them speak Finnish. So
yeah, absolutely. And Finnish is a very monotonous language in many ways. It doesn't have the same kind of melody that English has, for example, or French has. It doesn't have the same nuance or to expression that some other languages have. It's a very interesting language. I mean, the Ugrian Finnish language roots are extremely interesting. And there's no surprise that Tolkien studied it extensively when he was creating his elven languages. But it's not a happy language. And I think a lot of Swedes get the impression that because it doesn't sound happy, then Finns aren't happy.
Well, I think they are. Sometimes they have to, you know, instill the happiness in their daily life with a little bit of alcohol sometimes. Maybe, it helps. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and they also have a lot of pekka in the forest with with his knife and the monotony of his life.
Pekka McNeven.
Exactly. So another question in that same vein. What is the relationship that, because, okay, I'm going to be honest and maybe a little bit too brutally honest with you. Before I met my Nordic wife, I sort of didn't really know what was up there in the north of Europe. It was kind of, yeah, I know there's the guys that make IKEA and, you know, and the Legos, but which one is Denmark? Which one is Norway? Which one is Sweden? I'm not too sure. I didn't really think of it all that much. So how do the Swedes think and look at those countries in the south?
Right. Sure, gotcha. Generally, the Swedish impression, let's start with the neighboring countries. I've mentioned Finland. The neighboring country of Norway, we have this impression that they all wear their knitted sweaters and they go on long walks in the woods and they have a lot of oil.
So just before even we go further, you're absolutely confirming, and this is going to sound so condescending, but I'm doing it on purpose. You're confirming that the different countries that make up Scandinavia and more generally the Nordic region are very different countries. It's not the same people in different places in that whole region.
No, we have very different, both culturally, politically, and socially, we have a very different mentality. I mean, there's no surprise that a lot of nurses just go from Sweden to Norway. They do their training here, they start working here, they get bored, and then they go to Norway and work as nurses there. Because the job is just simply better. It's better paid, the hours are better, and so on. And that's because of, you know, fundamental political differences in the countries.
Really? I thought nurses had there was an excellent status for nurses in Sweden already.
No, it's actually fairly terrible. My former fiance was a nurse, and I would hear horror stories daily. The salary she got was, you know, I can't imagine anybody living off of that kind of salary. And most nurses in Sweden, they don't work full time even. They fall down to 80 or 75% because the job is simply, you know, too difficult.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Keep going.
And I'm hearing a lot of similar things coming from teachers as well nowadays.
That is absolutely not what I would have thought of when I was thinking about Sweden. You do put an emphasis, as you said, on social services, and I would have thought that this was all taken care of, because that's some of the problems we have here in France as well. But I don't know, maybe it's more pronounced here, maybe it's not as bad. I think there's a tendency as well, and you'll tell me if that, you know, makes sense, but I think there's a tendency when you're in a specific country to look at the situation in your country and point out the faults and the issues and not realize that things might be worse in, you know, other countries. And that's kind of what I thought of Sweden. You know, I thought it's actually better than France. But when the Swedes think of it, they're like, oh, this isn't, you know, this doesn't work and this isn't right. And, you know, is that... Does that make sense? Or?
Oh, no, absolutely. It makes perfect sense.
So you're saying, of course we're better than France. Who isn't? But
well, yeah. No, what I mean is it's very easy here in Sweden to say, oh, grr, the government takes too much of my money when I get my salary check. Grr. You know, and we forget that in other countries, people are being killed because they belong to the wrong religion or something. So obviously, it is very easy to focus on your own very narrow niche area of problems. And, you know, traditionally, we have had a pretty high standard of both education and healthcare. And now, for various reasons, I mean, both due to the political climate, the increased pressure on the welfare system and so on, these things aren't as good anymore. And there has been a bigger push towards moving things into the private sector.
But they're still better than in most other countries, aren't they?
Kind of depends on how you look at things. I mean, Sweden has been trailing pretty far behind when it comes to the PISA scores in schooling. So Swedish kids are just not as good at math as they used to be. We're trailing far behind the European average now even.
Oh, okay.
And there are various explanations for this. And, you know, depending on if you have an agenda or not, then you will find one or another reason. Some people say that it's because of the, you know, the privatization of certain schools and there's no control and they just want to earn money. Other people say, oh, it's because the immigrants are coming here and they don't have any math skills and they're bringing our average down. And, you know, all of these people have their own agendas. And you can't really trust any one of them because there is this agenda, like I said. But yeah, Sweden has been trailing behind on a couple of the major, you know, social welfare factors. You know, people don't get as large a pension as they used to, or state pension. People, you know, can't expect the same amazing schooling, you know, on international levels as they used to. It's still good. I mean, by all means, you know, we're not Uzbekistan. Sorry, Uzbekistan.
No, but you know, I'm not even. I'm talking about countries in a similar economic state. I'm talking about the other countries in, you know, countries in Europe and those kinds of comparison. Obviously, if you're going to compare them to third world countries, it's going to be no contest. But
Yeah, I mean, we are in many ways on a similar level as most of the Scandinavian or Nordic countries. I mean, Iceland has fallen behind due to the crisis. We have huge educational and especially healthcare problems in Iceland. Norway has a pretty good healthcare system going on. I'm not sure how their schooling is, but I'm expecting it to be on par or better than Sweden. Denmark, probably very similar story as to Sweden. It's fallen behind somewhat, maybe not as much. Mainly because, you know, Denmark has, they have different laws and regulations when it comes to how they do their social welfare systems. They have a more central European system, while the Scandinavian model doesn't apply as much to Denmark.
Okay. All right.
Denmark is a lot more German than it is Swedish, if we put it that way.
I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. But
it's a little bit of both.
Okay, so just to conclude this this discussion, if you can continue on the how you look at the south of Central Europe or the south neighbors for you, you know, France, Italy, Germany, all of that, and then maybe tell us how you look at the US.
Right. Well, starting with the Central and Southern Europe, there's a lot of this impression that it's generally a lazy culture. There's this, you know, the old impression of Spain having this siesta and French people just eating baguettes and going ha ha ha. You know, it's kind of the American model of things. There is still a lot of that. We still do look at France as, you know, that's where you go for culture in Europe. It's the old cultural home of Europe. And that kind of impression has existed for a long time. Swedes used to be very good friends with France. I mean, back in the 15 and 1600s, we were really close allies. I mean, our king at the time was basically French.
Yeah.
He lived in France most of his life, even though he ruled Sweden. So there was a lot of, you know, cultural exchange and so on. And we, you know, Swedish has changed a lot, the language even, due to our close relationship with French. With France, sorry. But I still think there is this impression that if you're south of, say, Germany, Czech Republic and Austria, or Switzerland even, if you're south of that line, you're probably lazy. You probably relax too much. You probably expect things to be taken care of for you in one way or another.
So, you know, that's kind of interesting because that, to me, is a criticism people make of socialism.
Yeah.
But it seems like that's not how you guys approached socialism.
No, it was very obvious back in the summer during the Greek economic meltdown. Because a lot of people here in Sweden were looking at Greece and going, what, they borrowed a lot of money and now they can't take care of themselves and they want to borrow more money? Ugh, lazy bastards. You know, there was very much that kind of impression. You know, they can't be trusted with money. Ugh, they don't know what they're doing. They're just primitive. Not necessarily those kinds of words, but it was kind of feeling. And, many people look at Italy and go, they can't keep a government for more than 18 months. What are they, heathens?
Which, it's funny because I think for some reason, and maybe it's different in the southern hemisphere, but everyone has this image of the people in the south compared to themselves. Yeah. I mean, that's probably the way we the same kind of feeling we have towards Italy, Spain, to an extent, and of course it's not generalized, but there's this kind of diffuse feeling where like the people in the south are lazier and the people in the north are those crazy robots.
There is very much of that.
And so your image of the U.S.?
Most people's exposure to the United States is through media. So we get this entire, we get Hollywood, but we also get the news of, school shootings and so on. And a lot of people don't really understand what's going on in the United States. And we do get a very narrow impression. Most of the time when we see a news story, it's because something terrible has happened. So it's not nuanced at all. Sweden has very strict gun control laws. It's very rare for people to own guns. And most people who own guns are hunters that own a lot of guns. So even if there is a large gun per person ratio in Sweden, most people never touch a gun through their entire lives. Most people don't even see a gun throughout their entire lives. So we have a very hard time understanding, that kind of thing. And most people get the impression that, the U.S. is still a little bit of this Wild West, that, anything goes and people can't be trusted. And we're looking at the current, the presidential debates that are starting up. And we're looking at things like, what, they put Donald Trump in there as a joke, maybe? there's a lot of that. It's like, yeah, the U.S., it's still just a teenager. I mean, this country is, what, 300-something years? Yeah, they'll grow up eventually. There's a lot of that kind of, kind of patronizing von Ober expression or impression here from Europe.
Okay, last question. Where would you like your children, where would you recommend people who have, I don't know how to ask the question. I was going to say, where would you want your children to grow up? Is it Sweden or not? And if, in both cases, why?
Good question. If I could pick where I would grow up at the moment, which is probably what I'm going to be answering for my children, I would probably say Sweden at the moment, or at least Stockholm, which is where I live, because it's where I have the most experience. Most of Sweden is, fairly unpopulated. There's only a couple of major cities and then, a few dozen minor cities, and then everything else is just forests, basically. But yes, I would like to see my children grow up in Stockholm. But it also depends very much on the future political movement in Sweden. I'm pretty scared that we're moving more and more back towards the old socialist mentality that in so many ways hampered our financial development and hampered our trade with other countries, hampered our relationship with other countries. We, when World War II started, we just closed up shop and said, all right, just you guys settle this. We're not going to touch it. We're not going to be there. When there was war in the Balkans, we hardly did anything. And I don't know, some people might say we're neutral to a fault, and I might agree. But yeah, so Stockholm, absolutely. Barring that, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff going around near Sweden. I'm a huge fan of Estonia. They're growing quickly. They have a booming industry. They have a very interesting political system going on. Flat taxes and everything. Very, very impressive. But barring that, I would probably end up on the west coast of the U.S.
Okay, interesting. But yeah, just to mention about Estonia, mm-hmm. you're not the first person putting it out as an example of a very interesting growing country that has a lot of assets. And, you know, I've heard this from multiple people, and I think Estonia is a very interesting, well, example of former Eastern European society that managed to get out of the issues it had in a very spectacular way. I think it might need to get a little bit more interested in Estonia in the coming years.
Yeah, Estonia, it's a fascinating place. I mean, it's got a population of less than 1.5 million people. It's tiny. I mean, there are U.S. states that are twice this size, three times this size. And they're so close to St. Petersburg. They're so close to Moscow. So they've been feeling a little bit of worry, you know, what with what's been happening in Georgia, Ukraine, and so on. They're so close to Belarus and Latvia that, you know, Belarus is a traditional friend of Russia. So, you know, Russia's never going to invade Belarus, so they don't have to worry. But Latvia, Estonia, I don't know, maybe they're a little bit worried because they are that close. And, you know, they are essentially just the only, they're those two countries, Estonia and Latvia, they're essentially the only two countries that are between Sweden and Moscow, or Sweden and Russia. You know, if you don't count Kaliningrad, which is this small little Russian...
Yeah, that doesn't count, basically.
It's a weird place. I don't know what to think of Kaliningrad. I had this huge fascination with Kaliningrad about a year ago, looking into their old German history, their Polish history, and now their current Russian oblast state.
All right. Well, what I took away from all of this is that you would still like your children to grow up in Stockholm, so they must be doing something good in there.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a beautiful city. I mean, we are a city of rivers, a city of lakes, a city of islands. And it's, you know, it's a comfortable city. It's grown up since the, 1400, 1500s. There are, you know, most of the city was built in the 1600s. We've never had any significant war to, you know, tear down the city, so we had to build it back up again. There are a couple of places that have been touched a little bit by war, but, you know, most of the time that's just, you know, hey, look at that. There's a cannonball still stuck in the side of the building. You know, it's that kind of thing. So, you know, we are an old city, and there's a lovely touch of the old and the new meeting in many places. And if you're ever in Stockholm, people, you know, look me up. I will be more than happy to guide you around or show you the sights.
Excellent. Well, if they want to do that, what would be the best way for them to get in touch?
The best way is probably Twitter. I'm at BrekkieT. That's B-R-E-K-I-T, as in my surname, Thomason.
Excellent. What are you up to? You were mentioning your podcasting network earlier. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. I launched a podcasting network back in January of 2011. It's called the SciCon Podcasting Network, C-S-I-C-O-N. And basically what we do, it's very similar to, you know, what you see over at Frogpants or Twit or 5x5. We have our own little narrow piece of geek culture. So we talk about MMOs, we talk about movies, we talk about comic books, we talk about, we have a daily or a week daily rather, news show, similar to Tom Merritt's tech news show, but more, instead of tech news, it's more geek culture news. So every single morning I record a show called Geek Days, 10 to 15 minutes worth of geek culture. So there's a lot of that, and we're still growing. We've actually more than doubled now during this past year in listener numbers and so on. And yeah, we're just looking forward to a great 2016 and hoping to get even more listeners.
So can you give us the email address again? URL again?
Sure. It's SciCon.net, C-S-I-C-O-N.net.
Excellent. Thank you.
And here's a little sneak preview that nobody knows except your listeners right now.
Okay.
As of New Year's, we will be moving to SciCon.fm.
Oh, well, that is...
Because, you know, FM, that's what all the big podcasting networks do nowadays,
I think.
I don't know. Relay FM is on FM, and there's a couple of other, you know, minor ones over at FM now.
Maybe I should try and think about that for my own then.
Yeah, because we know that over time, you know, as we grow and develop, we want to move into video content as well. And using the .net domain just wouldn't work. So we want to move into .fm for the audio component and then .tv for the radio or for the video component.
Very smart.
We do branding.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, Brecky, for being on the show. For me, you can find me at on Twitter at NotPatrick. You can also find me on Facebook. It is also NotPatrick. And you can go to FrenchSpin.com to get this episode. You will find the notes there. You will find other shows, including Pixels, which is a show about video games. And yeah, that's going to be it for us. We will be back in about a couple of weeks with a regular episode. And until then, I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you then. Bye, everyone.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.